barbecued Gollum fillet.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome the late arrivals at the Tolkien Ball, Mr. and Mrs. Faunt and their son Ollie, Mr. and Mrs. Olation of Smaug and their son Dez, and from the uttermost west, Theodore of Night.
I'm Paul Tobin. I'm here as a member of the Tolkien Society, one of the founder members of the local Smile. There are Smiles up and down the country, named after the hobbit holes where people used to live, where the name Smile comes from.
All the way from Spain, Mr. and Mrs. Ring to Rule Them All and their son Juan. Oh. And from Norway, Mr. and Mrs. For the Dwarf Lords and their son Sven.
The Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit seems to me a little heathen. What's a Methodist minister actually doing involved in such a thing?
Well, I wouldn't have said it was particularly heathen. Tolkien himself was a Christian, a Catholic. I don't agree with the battles and the killing and so on. I don't think that ought to be how we behave in the real world. But I still think the noble causes, the fight of good against evil and so on, is a kind of parallel of what you get in our world, and I get all kinds of sermon illustrations out of it. I'll stop using them now because they're fed up on me at the churches because I keep bringing it in. But I occasionally come across people who, somebody from the local Baptist church recently sat next to me in a Chinese takeaway and said, "I hear you're a member of the Tolkien Society." We had a good chat about it.
You say it's Tolkien was something you used in your sermons, etc.
Yeah.
Did you have children?
Yes, we've got three children.
Do you read Tolkien?
Yes, the youngest one's still too young to appreciate it, but the older two, who are now 11 and 9, I read The Hobbit 2. I am trying more ambitiously to read Lord of the Rings, and I tried to read it to the two eldest together. It didn't work because they were arguing with each other and not paying attention, or it was difficult to find times when they were both together. But I've persevered with Hannah, who's our middle child, and we're about a third of the way through at the moment. And if I'm absolutely honest, I couldn't really care less if she's listening. So really, she's a bit of an excuse to sit down and enjoy myself reading. But it's nice to have some audience listening.
I put all the bricks in there. Do you think that's going to be too many or...?
I think that's going to be fine for doing the mushrooms on.
Right.
And we can put it... we won't put the tray on this one.
Very good, isn't it? I mean, it's all the paper.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Right.
I'm Ian Smalley. I'm an academic by inclination. So for 2 days a week, I'm a professor of applied geomorphology in the University of Leicester. You know, study of landscapes, landforms. Landslides, in fact, is our speciality. And lerse soils, windblown soils. Sally and I have already demonstrated, I think, fairly clearly that the landscape that the hobbits live in is a lerse landscape. In North China, the entire landscape is covered by this yellow, windblown soil, this so-called lerse. And one of the most obvious manifestations of this is that the Yellow River is yellow. And it's yellow because of all the suspended material in it. Now, if you read Volume 1 of Lord of the Rings, they talk a bit about the Brandywine River, which, as you know, flows through the Shire. And the thing about the Brandywine that they always point out is that it's a yellow river. Okay, well, you don't just have a yellow river by accident. I mean, there has to be a cause for a yellow river in geomorphological terms. The obvious answer is that it's carrying a suspended load of yellow silt. I mean, it seems so unreasonable that it should all be true, but if you go to North China, the thing that people do in North China is essentially live in caves. Now, what did the hobbits do? They lived in caves. Now, why did the Chinese live in caves? Well, the point was that this lerse soil stands in vertical slopes. It's very easy to tunnel into. It has the soil mechanical properties that make it perfect for living in as a cave dweller.
This smells absolutely delicious, Sally. What have we got sizzling away here now?
We've got what's known as the Gollum's Nightmare cooked fish, which is basically fish fillets with chopped lemon balm, that's a herb, and garlic. Hello, Ian.
We're here.
On the other one, it's Eladen, and Elra here is Sally Mushrooms, which is the the marinade's getting into the fire now. It's mushrooms marinated in olive oil, crushed garlic, and chopped oregano and parsley.
Our hobbit's delight, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
My name is Jason Finch. I'm here as a guest of Buckleberry Ferry. I actually belong to a local smart called the Amari.
I also understand you're the man in charge of the Hobbit gold taking place.
Yes, that is a strange story, really. It's in The Hobbit. There's a wonderful story about orcs invading the Shire and hobbits meet in a battle. And one hobbit is riding a horse, has a club, and he knocks the chief orc's head off with a club. It goes flying through the air, goes in a rabbit hole. And the wonderful idea is that, hey, hobbits win the battle with a stroke at the same time invent the game of golf. And a few years ago, I think it's some American fans got drunk. A common pastime, I'm afraid, sometimes. But they said, hold on a minute, surely the hobbits have been playing the game of golf as we know it. So he invented this game, which involves knocking a doll's head, painted up as an orc, against a stuffed rabbit. And you score points by how close you get to the rabbit, if you actually hit the rabbit, style, sheer audacity to stroke, that sort of thing. It's just a bit light-hearted fun, but it's a very good laugh.
Right.
Oh, yes. Andrew Shaw on the strange practices that bring smiles to the Tolkien fan's face. From Middle Earth, we're going back to Earth, indeed 6 foot under in just a minute, when we'll hear about the trends in tombstones, and that's a subject which...